The following is a production of Galactic Netcasts.
Attention! The Sci-Fi Geeks Club is next! Please, stand by.
Live streaming provided by Alpha Geek Radio and Alpha Geek Video. Visit tunein.alphageekradio.com to learn more.
Hear ye! Another meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club is officially called to order!
Thank you, Daryl Johnston. Hello, welcome to another production of Galactic Netcasts. I'm Dave Nelson, and joining me on the panel this time around for the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Brad Ludwig and Gregor Sprague. Hey, guys!
Hello!
Hello!
So, Gregor, before we actually went live, you had a theory about how you're picked to be on the panel for the Sci-Fi Geeks Club.
Yes, because back in, like, I think October, September, that time frame, I was doing an every other week thing with the guests. And now there is a new pattern of I only come on with Trivia Geeks hosts or captain. Representing Team Hellfire Club is over here right now. With Michael.
Yeah, we should actually introduce Michael. Our guest this week is a member of the Trivia Geeks podcast. Second time with us. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Michael Johnson. Hello, Michael.
Hello. All right.
Michael, you know what happens after the second time when you come on again, right?
What's that? What's going on?
You get put into the Dave's outro.
Oh,
okay, cool.
Yeah, that works. Okay, yeah, I forgot to explain the rule. If you're on more than two times, the next time you're on, and from there on out, you're a panelist. So, Michael, you can never be a guest ever again on this podcast.
Oh, man.
Which means you do not get to pimp your products ever again.
What?
No. Just ask JF Dubo.
There needs to be a revision here on this.
Okay, here's the other advantage of being on the panel is your name gets to be on the end of the show every episode. Okay, once you're a panelist, mm-hmm. you're always mentioned at the end of the podcast.
Okay, well, that works.
Does that make you happy?
That's why Dave hasn't had too many people coming in more than two times, because otherwise he's going to be like, goodbye, Sarah and Jimmy and Tommy.
Yeah, because right now we have what? JF, we have Anessa, Matt, and Corey and Gregor and Brad. They're all repeat. Well, Brad's here every week, but the rest of them, we kind of filter in and out.
Hey, I don't mind being a periodic panelist from time to time.
All right. Nice. Well, after this time, the next time you're on, then you're a panelist. Bam.
All right.
So what's going on, Michael? Anything new since the last time we had you on?
Oh, not a whole lot new. Still running through Trivia Geeks, and we're having a lot of fun with that. We just had Justin Robert Young and Scott Johnson on last week, and a couple nights ago we had Daryl Johnson and Todd Whitehead, Mr. Gnomewise for Alpha Geek, on this week, and that was a whole lot of fun. So we're rolling along with that. Outside of that, just still working on my D&D game, getting just a lot of weird little story details all ironed out. I ended up having to go down a character rabbit hole because I needed to finish up some story that I was working on for my upcoming game. And I ended up having to make like five new characters in order to help facilitate this story. So, and now I have a lot more story that I bargained for, because all these characters, of course, they have to have kind of a backstory and a reason they're where they are. And luckily it self-perpetuates. So that's good.
Well, cool. I'm looking forward to hearing more about how the game progresses in the future, Michael.
I can keep you updated on that.
All right. We're going to hold you to it. So watch out, mister.
All right.
You've been warned.
Yeah, Gregor, what's new with you? What's you're busy with the Else Nerds podcast, right?
Yeah, Else Nerds show still rolling in betas, and actually, I want to throw a challenge out to all the Sci-Fi Geeks Club listeners. Take a listen to the last episode. It's beta number 7, and critique us on it. What should we fix sort of deal.
You know what? You have the opposite philosophy as to the normal podcast that we put on this network, because normally we just throw stuff on the wall and see if it sticks, right? Like
Well, that's what we've been doing, but I want to get to where we're on Galactic Netcasts.
Okay. What you're saying is Galactic Netcast is to a certain point now where shows have to be good before they come on. Not like the old days when we would just make a podcast and just change it midstream if it's not good enough, right?
Yeah.
That's exactly what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah.
So we've become a premier place for podcasts.
Exactly.
That's the dream, isn't it?
Yeah. I feel good now. Okay. Do as many betas as you want. Go for it.
Beta number 354, beta number 355.
Hey, whatever works, man.
Oh, we're closed collecting Netcast 2 years ago. You
it's
that?
Too late. You missed your chance. Yeah.
Beta 42 is going to be the one that does everything.
Yeah.
Boom. There it is.
See, you should go, aim for that goal, Gregor. 42, and then come on over.
That could be a show right there. Just call it Beta 42.
Oh, my God. New podcast on Galactic Netcast Network before Else Nerd comes on.
You can find me at Dice Tomato on Twitter.
All right. Let's talk about sci-fi. That's why we're here. Before we do, though, got to thank Alpha Geek Radio for allowing us to put this crap on their stream. We stream both our audio and video. Thanks, Todd Whitehead, for...
Thank you, Todd.
Yeah.
Thanks, Todd. We love you.
You can find us at... you can find the streams at alphageekradio.com. You can find where we are on the social networks, on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, all that jazz, on our website, links on the main page at gncasts.com. All right, on to the news, our first story of the week. We're going to talk about something that none of us have any experience with, but it's... But it's an interesting it's an interesting story nonetheless. So there's a magazine, or was a magazine, called If Magazine. It was around from 1952 to 1974. So before the internet, people had to find their stories elsewhere, right? So
I'm having flashbacks to the Spreecast days. Switch you out with Glenn and this out with porn.
Yes, porn in the woods. That's where we found our porn, was in the woods, in the weeds, side of the road. Yeah. Do you want to talk about that for a second, Glenn? Because we could.
Wait, what?
I mean, Gregor. Sorry.
Well, first off, let's say happy birthday, Glenn, who his birthday was yesterday.
Oh, Glenn. Okay, Glenn Rubenstein, happy birthday if you're listening. Probably not, but...
This is not something I have extensive knowledge about, but during one of the episodes of What We're Watching Weekly, back when Tasteful Dave Nelson was one of the co-hosts...
Yeah?
We just... Glenn's like, yeah, and didn't you ever find porn in the woods? I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, okay.
People would just stash the porn in the woods?
People before the internet, if you were of a certain age and weren't able to legally acquire pornography, for some reason, people stashed their pornography in the woods. Like, you and your buddies would have, like, a whatever out in the, like, a... structure of some kind out in the woods, and you'd store your...
Yeah, you'd have your clubhouse, man.
Yeah.
You build your clubhouse out of the local timber and...
Yep.
And things you just find wherever, and you'd have your nice shoebox.
Yep.
Back in my day, we used to put the hustlers in the bramble bushes.
So, circling...
Yeah, it's exactly how I feel sometimes.
Oh, wait a second. Michael, I like your old man voice. That's great. I think
yes.
I think Michael and Brad should do a old man voice off.
Show, yes. Oh, no.
No. Don't get me started on that.
Okay, let's actually talk about this story. So, circling back around to magazines, there was a magazine from 1952 to 1974 called If. And it won a bunch of Hugo Awards. It was basically a magazine that of short sci-fi, like short science fiction. short stories that were of the science fiction nature.
Yeah, it looks like Robert Heinlein wrote a lot for it.
Yeah. Robert Heinlein, who else?
There were highlights over the years, including Robert Heinlein's novel, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, Harlan Ellison's short story.
God, I hate no Harlan Ellison.
I have no mouth, but I must scream. And Larry Niven's short story, The Coldest Place.
So they won awards for these short stories in this magazine. They were eventually acquired by Galaxy magazine, which was a similar type deal. And eventually the magazine disappeared. But you can now find every single issue on archive.org, which is pretty cool. So if you're in the mood for some older science fiction short stories,
and yeah, I'd be like the golden age of science fiction. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
You could hear about the what happened in the year 2000.
Yeah.
Year 2000.
That's why I did it, because I knew Mike would be able to hit that high note.
Sorry, old Conan bit.
Yeah. No, it's perfectly acceptable to break that
and,
out.
And you have a lovely voice and can pull that off.
Mm-hmm. The rest of us are like.
Yeah, if I tried it, it would sound like I was strangling a cat.
Oh, we don't want that.
No, so, you really don't.
So I want to ask you guys.
They get angry and they got claws.
Would you be interested, if you were looking for something to read, would you wander over to archive.org and peruse one of these magazines for their short stories?
I think it would be a pretty interesting trip down memory lane, or at least nostalgia lane, from the 1950s, 1960s on, you know, how they took science fiction and sort of different levels of writing back then too. I mean, it's, they definitely had a lot more, I think, storytelling to do in the realm of science fiction, because it literally was things they had to make up that didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And Dave, you're talking to the guy who at the district library would go get those photo reels that had all the newspapers.
Oh yeah. Microfiche.
The microfiche. And would just flip through to the comic book or to the comics parts.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. Like,
I could care less about the news in Jackson, Michigan from like 30 years ago. I want to get to the comics.
Neat. No, that's cool. That's awesome.
Old Rex Morgan MD.
Yeah.
We'll put a link to the article that has the link to the magazines on archive.org. But I'm sure that if you just went on to archive, by the way, where this show is located,
archive.org and
Elsnerds, yep, for now at least, you can probably just do a search and you'll be able to find If Magazine at archive.org. I would love to get somebody's firsthand experience with this. I may actually go on there and read a story or two. I mean, come on, there's some really good writers. I mean, Heinlein and Niven. I mean, Larry Niven. He's a god in the realm of science fiction.
Oh yeah.
All right. So cool. That's story number one. Story number two is a story that seems to be getting added onto by the minute. So Nicholas Meyer is joining the new Star Trek series. One of the people credited for saving Star Trek back in the day after their terrible first movie was Nicholas Meyer. He was recruited, or he has been recruited, as a writer and executive producer with the new CBS Star Trek series, slated to launch in 2017. He will work with executive producer showrunner Brian Fuller, who has experience in Trek in a different era. See, this is great, because there's different levels of time periods when it comes to the people involved in this project, because you have Nicholas Meyer, who is one of the oldies that worked on Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan, Star Trek III, no, Star Trek IV and VI, I think he was involved
two,
in
two, four, and six, yeah,
two, four, and the good ones,
right?
Yeah, and then you have Brian Fuller, who worked on Star Trek: Deep Space Nine and Voyager, mm-hmm. And now the latest addition to the story is, and this just came in tonight, is Rod Roddenberry is being, he's joining the crew as well as, I believe, an executive producer as well. So there's some actual Roddenberry DNA in this joint.
That sounds like that might just be for show, though. Because I think CBS is still kind of worried about this new Star Trek series because they're planning on digital release and not any kind of immediate broadcast release.
Yeah.
Besides the pilot, and then it's like...
Right. I think...
Drug dealer, hey, get your first kick, and...
I think attaching Roddenberry's name on there is to try to grab it some sort of legitimacy for the fan base.
Interesting theory. I had not thought of that.
Nicholas Meyer, though, is going to be a very interesting ad because he brings... he's like the John Grisham of the Trek world. He brings that military storytelling and knowledge to Star Trek, which is one of the things that brought it out of its funk from the first movie, rearranging a lot of the storytelling with costume design, for example. A lot of that was Nicholas Meyer work, how he homogenized the costume design to make it look more military, make Starfleet feel more military, and kind of give it that identity that it sort of needed so that people could identify with it from what they expected now from the military. So I'm curious to see what Nicholas Meyer really is going to add to this.
Yeah. And that look lasted for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think it probably influenced later costumes as well. So let's see what. Yeah, does him being hired on, does that indicate any direction as to where this show's going to go, do you think, Michael?
It might. So they still have, I mean, of course, they still haven't given a lot of information on how they're doing anything with, I think they said post-Voyager time period is what they're looking at.
Yeah.
I have a lot of questions and concerns regarding that because there's a lot of story that goes on after Voyager gets home that they covered in the Star Trek Online game. So I don't know if they're going to write that out as non-canon anymore. And especially with everything that started the new Star Trek movies with the destruction of Romulus and Remus and everything like that. Because what's been going on in the galaxy now is that the Romulans are trying to still fight for their a place to live because they're now the homeless kids in the galaxy, and no one wants the Romulans to be anywhere near them because they're assholes.
Yeah.
And you have what's her face Romulan that was Tasha Yar that's causing problems because she's trying to keep what's left of the Romulan Empire together, and then you have splinters of the Romulan Empire that are just kind of going off on their own way. Meanwhile, the Remans have been essentially fighting for their own independence from the Romulans, from being subjugated for so long. So there's a lot of stuff going on in the Beta Quadrant with that, at least in the game. I don't know if any of that's gonna take place into the series. It stands to reason that it should, because there's some good story to be told there, especially with that in mind. But if they're looking for something innovative and different, I'm still rooting for Starfleet Academy.
They could go the route. That's very interesting. I would love to see that as well. They could go the route with the way Disney and Marvel, or not Marvel, Disney and Lucasfilm did, where they got rid of a lot of that, what was canon with the books and all that stuff, and just made it more streamlined. So maybe take a few of part of that extra stuff that was in the game, and maybe make that as part of the story, but not all of it. I don't know.
Right. And with Nicholas Meyer bringing that sort of militaristic storytelling back to Star Trek, and Brian Fuller and his just ability to work with a very serial style of storytelling, I mean, that honestly, that in my mind works best for having, you know, visions of the Starfleet Academy, you know, because that's the one story they haven't really told yet. We don't really know what goes on in the Academy, what happens, you know, when a student is enlisted in the Academy, or when they go through officer training or anything. The whole process there from cadet to officer is just a blank. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of opportunities for great storytelling in there. Bring back some characters as instructors to some degree as well.
That'd be a perfect way to do that. Yeah, bring back a little, you know, a little Bashir, a little Cole Meany would be awesome as an old instructor, you know, like.
Bashir might not so much. So his character was really into the field medicine aspect of being at Deep Space Nine. He liked being out on the frontier, out in the middle of nowhere, because, I mean, his quote, that's where the action was.
Yep.
I wouldn't see him as being terribly happy to be teaching at the Academy.
Mm-hmm.
But who's to say they couldn't change his character around somehow to make that work? So that would be interesting, yeah.
You know, I'm sure with Brian Fuller involved and his involvement in Voyager and Deep Space Nine, that he's probably going to bring some of those characters in if it's possible to bring some of those old actors in as guests. Because this is a tradition with Star Trek shows. At least one time, especially the first episode, the pilot episode, there's a person that kind of bridges the last show. Well, it would be impossible with Enterprise, but maybe with a Voyager, bridging Voyager to this new show in some way, bringing one of the actors in.
Oh, yeah, they'll have to.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and that really gives them another good opportunity for an interesting, at least with Starfleet Academy, an interesting antagonist with Red Squad, which is the infamous, like, elite cadets that are at Starfleet Academy that are always getting in the trouble and doing stuff.
Yeah, that was the Next Generation episode with Wesley and the guy that would become Tom Paris but wasn't Tom Paris, right? That was Red Squad?
It was the same character, but they couldn't use the character name because of some licensing rights to the original writer. So.
Ah, okay. I was wondering why that was the case. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what it was. They used the same character, same archetype, same story, but they couldn't use the name because of a licensing issue.
Okay, so I wanted to touch on one more thing, something that Nicholas Meyer said to Den of Geek, a little quote, which may shed some light into the direction of the show as well. And he said, I think it's going to be a different Star Trek. It will go in a different direction. And I think this is probably good, because the thing that mainly troubles me about Star Trek is the fear of it being maybe retreads of itself. And to the degree I had any influence on the thing, Star Trek at all, what was that at least while I was there, we were fooling around. And if you're not fooling around, then things can become stale. And I think that Brian Fuller, who is a very clever fellow, has ideas, some of which I've heard that are innovative and different. Different is what got me interested. So that's intriguing.
And that's what kind of leads me to believe that they're not going to go to the same, you know, crew on a starship format that they've done time and time and time again. Because, I mean, you had the original series that was the original, you know, crew on a starship format, just submarine kind of story. And then you had a more refined version of that with The Next Generation, and just them being allowed to do a lot more with character development in that respect. Voyager was, you know, the stranded story. You had Deep Space Nine with the frontier outpost. The Wild West was basically what it was.
Yep.
And we have yet to get like a sort of a younger crew, what's happening at home, learning how to, you know, work within the realm of Starfleet.
Yep.
I think that would be something that would be very different and would work with a newer audience too.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be younging up the audience, get the kids, you know, do a CW version of Star Trek or something.
That's what a lot of people are going to be afraid of at that point.
Yeah. I don't think they'll go that route.
That part scares me a little bit, because then I could see them drawing comparisons to, especially when you guys talking about Starfleet Academy and doing a show set there, then it's like, oh, well, they'll just do ABC's Quantico. And, you know, they'll have the sexy girl come in and get out of the space pool or whatever. And she's got on her swimsuit. And, oh, she just looks so sexy. And, oh, here's the oblivious makeout scene in the pilot, because it's no longer Star Trek. It's a procedural set in the Star Trek universe.
I don't think they're going to go that route with the people involved. I really can't see it. So I think we're safe in that aspect.
Yeah, hopefully CBS is going to be a little more hands off with this. So it gives Brian Fuller and Nicholas Meyer a little creative freedom to, like you said, mess around.
And I think they could do that because of the fact that it's not going to be on CBS or any of the CBS TV channels. It's going to be a CBS All Access exclusive.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that, while that may be good for them, that's still the part that bothers me, because it feels like CBS doesn't, they're not fully invested on the idea that a new Star Trek series can be relevant now.
Michael, don't get Brad started. Brad,
no,
this is a thorn in his side.
When this whole thing came out, me and Brad, actually Brad was on the Else Nerds that week, and we had said basically the same things. But I could see this going one of two ways, with either CBS going, if Star Trek does really well and they get like, they're like, oh, look at all the subscribers we got, or if it doesn't, they'll be like, wait, what? We never did Star Trek.
Or they change their strategy and decide to release. My theory is they're going to do both. They'll release it first on their online, and then maybe in a few months, then run it on the network. That's just my. And it may not be a decision.
That's what I hope that they do.
Yeah. You know, it may not be a decision now, but maybe they'll realize it and then change their strategy midstream, you know?
Because I honestly don't want to have to subscribe to just CBS service when there are easily two other perfectly good services right out there right now that they can use, and one of them they do use very consistently, that are just as accessible. And I'm not going to pay for their fee for one show.
They're going to see a lot of spikes. They're going to see, oh, Star Trek subscribers, it's off the air. Then their subscribers are going to drop off until the next season.
They're going to see... No, they're going to see, depending on how they release this, they might see a small bump for people in that first week.
They'll see more downloads than anything.
Yeah.
Torrenting will be what decides that.
Yeah, and then they'll probably see a secondary spike once the whole show is done of people binge watching.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And I think CBS All Access does a 7-day thing, which is stupid to begin with, because like 7 days typically, unless it's Sling TV, because Sling, I tried that twice now and I'm like 3 days in, nah, it's not for me.
And I guarantee they'll see at least just as many numbers through torrent downloads than anything through their subscription service with that.
Oh, all right. So time will tell. I guess we'll find out in a year. This time next year, we'll everything will be revealed. All right, let's move on to the comic book world. Ben Affleck wasn't thrilled with the Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice script. He rewrote it. According to sources, in the new issue of Us Weekly, Affleck would go into wardrobe, get all suited up for the day in his bat suit. Then he would sit around reworking the script. Ben wasn't thrilled with it and would find himself on multiple occasions fixing it in the day of...
I'm sorry. I'm just imagining this troubled grown man in a Batman suit slaving over a writing desk.
The only thing, though, would be is like if you could imagine like Christian Bale doing the same thing, and just be like, exterior shot, Gotham at night.
Don't get me wrong. I like the idea of Ben Affleck as Batman.
No,
he has enough acting ability to do it well. He has enough love for the character and the property to understand, you know, the reasons for why things are written. And he at least has some input into the writing of it, and he's a competent writer.
He's an Academy Award winning writer.
Well, yeah, that too. Yeah.
Competent writer. I think didn't he win an Academy Award with his first movie he wrote?
Yeah, with Matt Damon. Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
I just hope that when he was done, he was like, this isn't the script you deserve. This is the script you need.
And he might even be the first Batman in my mind, or the first person in my mind, to accurately play both Bruce and Batman. Because, I mean, they are two fundamentally different characters. Yes. There hasn't been one person so far that has been able to do both, at least to my liking.
Well, yeah, he seems like, whoever said it about him having passion for this character, I really think he does. Like, it sounds like from all the reports I've heard and read, is he wants to direct the second the actual standalone Batman movie.
He's going to be.
Oh, okay, that's a for sure thing.
I believe he's going to be writing and directing the first Batman movie, in this universe that DC's creating, and I think maybe even the second if the first one does well. And this is something that's good. It's good because, and don't get me wrong, I have appreciation for Zack Snyder, I'm going to put my Corey hat on for a moment and give you his typical spiel.
Okay, lay it on us.
Man of Steel sucked. Corey hat off.
Fair enough.
He has valid points to this. Because of the fact that you have Man of Steel, you have Jonathan Kent not behaving like Jonathan Kent, you have Superman not behaving like Superman.
Wait, I'm sorry, hold on. Jonathan Kent not behaving like Jonathan Kent?
You have you have Jonathan Kent not behaving like Jonathan Kent would behave.
Which parts?
Save yourself, don't use your powers.
Yeah, that's all John Kent, man.
Yeah.
There are... God, I'm trying to channel.
And it wasn't so much save yourself, don't use your powers. It was don't use your powers to save me. This is what's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
At least that's what I got from it.
Then that's kind of what I got too.
And then the other part of don't use your powers, it was more so because, you know, protection of Clark. He knew that if his powers got out, he wasn't in a place to be able to defend himself mentally from anyone, and he would just go nuts, and you know he needed John Kent to tell him to back off. But I mean, like I said, that's at least what I got from John Kent.
Yeah, and then like Superman, it seemed like they jumped an awful lot from Superman battling General Zod, doing a buttload of damage, which I'll basically let up for. Hey, here's why we're doing Batman v Superman is because of Man of Steel, and then ended up killing Zod. It seemed like in the comics, you would have seen Superman trying to do other things, trying to do less non-lethal things to stop General Zod. Not just go, all right, this is what I got to do, sort of deal.
Yeah, I think the problem with that was that they weren't trying to write the archetypical Boy Scout Superman. They wanted what we would think a more realistic Superman to be. Someone who people could identify with as a person, not as this
alien that he is.
Right. This alien untouchable superhero that everyone understands him to be. He was always for truth, justice in the American way. And, you know, clearly they ended up where he wasn't really like that in the movie.
And again, I like Zack Snyder. I appreciate his work. He does do great work, but...
He does do good visual work.
Yes. But it seems like with Batman, you can go dark and gritty. That's cool. Superman, you can occasionally, but it seems like they're setting up this universe where they're going to do Superman in a dark, gritty way. And I'm like, and again, it's like going back to the whole Superman stands for truth, justice, the American way. Superman is the light for Metropolis.
Mm-hmm.
He is their protector. He is, they always do this dichotomy between Metropolis and Gotham. I mean, Detroit. No, I mean, actually, I mean Gotham here. where, sorry, Michigan guy, I have to throw the crack in there that they're casting Gotham perfectly with the city of Detroit. Where Gotham, dark, gritty, crime, just awful place for a lot of things. So you bring in Batman. You have Batman in there who's going to use fear and intimidation to stop crime.
Right.
Then you have Superman, who is
love and compassion.
Yeah, love, compassion. Let's, you know,
I'm mercy and compassion.
Yeah, I'm gonna go get a cat out of a tree, 1 second, and then go stop this bank robbery from another, and then I'm gonna go catch this airplane because 3 of the engines failed on out of the 4, sort of deal, you know. And I didn't really see that too much in Man of Steel. It was more, oh, here's Clark Kent over here just trying to hide his powers, and nope, he's got to use his powers now. So here he is. Here's the space suit from his birth parents.
Well, let's
the only one major theme that I saw in there that they I'm not really sure if they nailed, but they did touch on many times was the whole the one weakness that Superman has is the fact that he can't save everyone.
Yeah.
All right, let's swing back around to the original intent of this article. I wanted to ask you guys, do you think this is a good sign that Ben Affleck was on set rewriting the script, or do you think it's a bad sign? Or it doesn't mean anything? What do you guys
think? I think it's actually good, because I think Ben probably saw, and I can't think of who wrote the stuff originally, like who's like the
it was Goyer, wasn't it?
Was it Goyer?
I thought it was Goyer.
Oh crap, if it's Goyer, then I gotta put on the Beatmaster hat here. give me 1 second, let me actually look this up real quick, because if it is Goyer, then Batman, or then Ben Affleck is correcting a lot of bullcrap.
Okay, so what I heard, it was somebody, whether it was Goyer or not, it was somebody that did work on the last Dark Knight movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, what else did they have involvement in?
Chris Terrio, David S. Goyer.
Okay.
And then they list also in the writing credits, they list Bob Kane, Bill Finger for creating Batman, and Jerry Siegel and Joel Schuster. Schuster for creating Superman.
Yeah, it's going to be the first Batman movie with Bob Kane being credited, I think.
No, Finger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finger, yeah.
But, so this, honestly, what this tells me is this is giving me more hope for this movie. Where I was, I'm going to go watch it, you know, opening day, you know, all that stuff. This gets me more excited because this is a guy who truly understands the character, the continuity, not just let's do a majority of this, the Dark Knight Rises because of the action points, and then bring in something else. Like, okay. That's sort of my take with this, doing this. Like, this is Ben Affleck realizing, okay, we have to set up, and of course this means re-showing the origin. Why? We all know his parents die after going to see The Mask of Zorro.
I don't think they're going to dwell on it too much. I think they'll touch on it for a moment and then move on. I don't think it's going to be a big deal.
With all the characters they're shoehorning in there, they don't have time to do that.
I would expect that if they do that, it's going to be, do you remember the beginning of Raimi's Spider-Man 2? Where in the opening credits they kind of told the story from the first Spider-Man in the in like sort of like a storyboard form.
Yeah.
Something like that would be the way I would, you know, get that done, get that out of the way. Do kind of a quick storyboard of Batman's brief history and Superman's brief history from the previous movie, and then boom, done.
All right, let's move on from this because we're already 44 minutes into the episode. So
we got a couple. That's the other pattern I have. I lengthen the show.
Yeah, you do. You tend to do it, but you know you add quality too, Gregor. So it's all good.
It's all good.
All right. Let's before we. I know we've got a Marvel story, but I'm going to separate DC and Marvel because they can't be next to each other. Let's talk about Ghostbusters.
Talking Image Comics. Oh no.
Now let's talk about Ghostbusters. The Ghostbusters. The new movie had a teaser trailer released today. Did you guys see it?
Yes. No.
Yes.
Okay. So two yeses, one no. I saw a part of it. I didn't see it completely. So. Brad, I'm going to let you begin your thoughts, and you want to set it up a little bit, describe, or either you or Michael want to describe the actual trailer itself.
Funny thing is, real quick, you search Ghostbusters trailer, they give you the 1984 trailer.
Well, it was only released today, so I don't think that the SEO is fully kicked in for it. So,
if you do a YouTube search, you'll find it.
No, that's what that was the first link, but with Google, they're like, oh, hey. Here you go.
They know you well then.
Yes. You know, they give right off the bat, and the trailer's about 2 minutes long, just a little over 2 minutes long. And it gives a clear nod to the original series, and but the whole approach as you watch the whole thing, the chemistry that McCarthy and Kristen Wiig have. You only get a little bit of Kate McKinnon speaking in a few sections, and she's delightfully quirky as the sort of she's the engineer of the group. The other Wiig and McCarthy are the physicists / paranormal investigators, and then I can't remember the
Leslie Jones.
Yes, thank you. And her character is the one problem I had with Winston Zeddemore is he had nothing to do. He was just like the guy they hired to do some stuff around the place.
Well, I think that was part of the joke in the original, though.
He
was supposed to be the everyman that was just that showed up. Then they were like, "All right, cool, we have a fourth now."
But you know, by movie two, it was like I didn't feel like he was fully. It didn't feel like he was fully integrated. But looking at the byplay that they seem to have, she's got a thing. She works that's Chicago. Sorry, the subway system. So she knows the transportation systems and she knows the layout of New York. So I mean, she looks like she's going to be the driver.
She's the urban one.
Well, there is that. But it looks like there's enough comedy and there's enough seriousness that it's really. I think it's going to hold true to the spirit of the original.
Do you think it's going to stand apart from the originals?
Yes, I do. It looks like, well, the concept, and they lay it right out in the trailer, I'm not giving anything away, is somebody's built a device that amplifies. Well, I mean, that's kind of what they did in the first one, I guess. It gathered it, not so much as amplified
building.
It. Yeah. So, I mean, they've got that going on. The special effects that they have for the undead or for the ghosts, it's a cool take. You know, back in the 80s, we didn't have the capabilities and special effects that we do now. And what they did looks really kind of cool. So
what I understand about the special effects is that, it's reported that, they attempted to use a lot more practical effects as opposed to CGI, and they just kind of use CGI to sort of fill out the edges.
Okay.
So so that beginning scene where the lady in the library throws up on Kristen Wiig's character, a lot of that is supposed to be very practical effects, and she's wearing like an LED light suit.
Oh, okay.
And then they just kind of do some of the, you know, glowy things around her with CGI. But they were attempting to work more with actual physical people there than someone dressed up in a mocap suit.
Okay, well, that makes it even cooler then.
Thank you, Star Wars Episode 7. Thank you, J.J. Abrams.
We're actually going to do an interesting part here with movies where we're getting back to practical effects.
Right.
Like sort of, and I literally just, while Brad was talking, I just watched the trailer. It didn't scream comedy to me. It wasn't until the end part with like, there were some funny moments in there, yeah, but it got me a little worried that all the funny moments we saw or that are in the movie, we just saw in the trailer.
Well, okay.
The original Ghostbusters wasn't so much a comedy.
You took the words out of my mouth, Michael. I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, it was a dark comedy, but it wasn't meant to be a slapstick funny haha. And they tried that with the second movie and fell flat on their face.
Yeah. But I mean, again, this seems like how a lot of SNL sketches have been going recently. The ones I enjoy the most are the ones with Leslie Jones, because she doesn't quite, she's a good actress and all that stuff, but she doesn't really play other characters aside from versions of herself.
I mean, that's the problem I'm seeing with this cast, is I don't have the problem with the characters being female. I have a problem with the cast playing the same parts that you usually see them in every movie that they're in.
But you can make Bill Murray plays Bill Murray.
Yeah, you're right. I was going to say that too.
What clothing you throw on him, Dan Aykroyd? Dan Aykroyd is he does morph into his characters. But you know, Harold Ramis again. You know, you see him in other films.
So to that degree, I could see. Kristen, or not Kristen,
Kate McKinnon.
Kate McKinnon, yeah, that's it. Kate McKinnon, she morphs more into her characters. Yes. And then Melissa McCarthy will morph a little bit more. Kristen Wiig will, but it's like what I said with the Suicide Squad trailer, when the first one that came out that everyone was orgasming over. That, and then you see Will Smith, and it's like, oh, that's Will Smith playing Deadshot. It wasn't until a more recent trailer, I'm like...
Well, looking at Will Smith, that's all. Will Smith does Will Smith, and he does Will Smith well.
Yeah, he's just Mr. Charming. That's what he does.
Well, he's played a couple of very deep characters, like that Concussion movie.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of other ones.
This is what I've said before with Will Smith, and I'm getting us way off track here, but Will Smith has two different modes. There's the Will Smith playing whichever character he is, Bad Boys, possibly Suicide Squad. And then you have the where he can actually morph himself into the character. Concussion, Ali, you know, examples like that.
Well, did you watch him in, what was that movie, 7 Pounds?
No, I think my sister did.
That was really good.
It's for a Will Smith movie that is a Will Smith character not being Will Smith and not being any other historical character. It's really, really good. It's worth a watch.
All right, let's move on to we'll put the link to the trailer in the show notes. So by the time the podcast gets out here, I'm sure everybody will have already seen it, but there might be a few people that hadn't. So, all right, final story. This is a late addition that Gregor put in, so I'm going to let you take the reins on this, Gregor.
All right, so way back in 2004, Joss Whedon and John Cassaday drew a Marvel comic called Astonishing X-Men. It was really... I hadn't really read the run. I read some of it, but not like all of it. But it was a cool... This is when I tried to get into comics was at this time. And then just forgot, didn't have money, you know, poor kid problems came into the way. But this is what they did that motion comic thing with was Astonishing X-Men. That was... You know, back then, I believe it was post Firefly and all that. And then he does the movies, he does the Avengers movies. Well, he's coming back to Marvel Comics. Joss Whedon is coming back to do a a background story for Captain America's 75th anniversary. And it'll be appearing in Captain America Sam Wilson number 7. He's teaming up with John Cassaday again. And the cool part is with how this sounds, the book is going to be like an 80-page thing, because you're going to have the main story by Nick Spencer and David Acuna, who are the main writer and artist for Captain America Sam Wilson. And then you got another backup story by the great Greg Rucka and Mike Perkins. And then you have this other story. So this book looks like it's going to be really, really good. And this one is, I think, going to possibly be part of the kicker to doing the whole Captain America Sam Wilson, Captain America Steve Rogers books that they're going to be doing. And there's not really too much to be said other than this looks really cool. And I believe it's going to be, you can pre-order it now. Like if you go to your comic book store and pre-order it now, and it comes out on March 30th. And I believe this is going to be at least the main story, the background stories, I don't know, is going to be a part of the mini event that they're doing. Was it Assault on Pleasant Hill? I believe is what it's called. Which actually sounds and is so far sounding really interesting.
So this is bringing Steve back into the fold.
Yes, this event is what's going to bring Steve back. It's gonna euthanize him, but not in the
euthanize.
Way
Sorry,
it's gonna energize him. I did that on purpose. It's gonna revitalize him, make him young, make him the super soldier, and actually give him a new shield,
which
is freaking awesome. Yeah, so before anyone who is a Sam Wilson fan freaks out, the whole two Captain America books, it's not gonna be. At least yet, Marvel said, is like they're not going to have Sam Wilson start fading back and then he becomes Falcon, or he goes back to being Falcon.
What?
They're keeping the two. Sam still has the shield you see right there with Captain America holding that round shield. Steve Rogers has the more traditional shield, the kite style shield. But the cool part is it can split apart. And he'll hold one part that has, and like a diamond will come out of the bottom, sort of deal. Like it breaks into a diamond.
Fancy.
How do I send you a picture here? I think I found it.
You could send it in group chat, but if you want to see on the thing, you could do share your screen.
Yeah, you can do share screen if you want. I don't know which.
Hold on, let me. I can
where is that share? Oh, screen share. Boom. I want this. I just did just a random Google image search. search.
So, Dave, do me a favor and make sure that the video, I'm not being put over on it. But the bottom, so right there at the star, the bottom part will come in, like almost like you can make like a diamond right there, like a traditional parallelogram. And he can take both those parts in both hands.
Do you want to... Dave, can you click on Michael's window so it comes up?
Yeah, I did have it up there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's weird. Okay, go ahead.
It's that weird delay, that weird hangout delay thing.
Yeah. But no, it's a cool, this is a younger, or him being re-euthanized, re-youngered, however you want to say it.
Reinvigorated.
Reinvigorated.
Yeah.
So he's going to be basically younger than he was before he got old, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're doing some mumbo jumbo thing to do it, and it's
cool. Hydra pseudoscience.
Yeah. I mean, and it's cool.
Beat him with Vita rays again.
Yeah, something. I mean, and it's a cool thing that's happening. I don't know if this is the character, if this is the version that Joss Whedon and John Cassaday are going to be using. Like, they could be telling a World War I, World War II story, for all I know. And I would be cool with it. I want to see if I can find the...
Hang on.
This shield broken.
I didn't realize that the bringing him back Steve Rogers back was the story that Whedon was going to write. Hang on.
I don't necessarily know that that is. It's just that this is where this is taking place. This 75th issue, or 75th anniversary issue, is taking place during the Assault on Pleasant Hill storyline. And so he's telling a backup story, which basically just means, Assault on Pleasant Hill, because the Alpha just came out this week. Avengers Standoff is the other name for it.
Wasn't Assault on Pleasant Hill what started Civil War, D-list superheroes that Wrecked.
Yeah, this and
Speedball.
Yeah, and
Ricochet.
And this is actually what's probably also, this is the other thing that's going to happen. Like, Age of Ultron got us Hunger, which got us bringing Angela into the main continuity, or into the Marvel Universe. But they're doing that because that's the next event, is going to be Civil War 2. But it's going to be Iron Man going up against Captain Marvel. Hmm. The Carol Danvers, in my opinion, one and only Captain Marvel.
All right. Before we move on to the next story, I wanted to mention one more thing Marvel-related. Did you guys hear the story that they're bringing Timely Comics back?
Oh, yes. We actually talked about this on Else Nerds. They're bringing Timely back, but not in... Like, it's a new imprint. They've been doing these things called True Believer issues. So it's basically a reprinting with new banner and all this stuff of older issues. With the True Believer, they were doing stuff like they were doing Deadpool throughout like some important issues with Deadpool there, which worked great. But with Timely, they're doing it with the all new, all different launch. It's going to be happening in June, and it's going to be the first three issues of books like Invincible Iron Man, all new, all different Avengers, Silk, Squadron Supreme, all those for the price of $3.
I thought it was going to be like 5 cents. The first issue was 5 cents.
No, for three issues, it's going to be like 72 pages, three issues of a story arc, essentially, for $3.
Oh, okay. All right.
The problem with that is, and Corey brought this to my attention, and I'm like, yeah, but the kids, is that a lot of these books are not chart toppers. They're not really popular books.
Well, why do you think they're doing it? Why do you think?
Because it's a part of the lineup.
Okay.
Like Carnage. Carnage is one of the books, written by Jerry Conway, for the first three issues you get $3. So the problem comes with the comic book store owners who already ordered and got and have extra copies of issue one and issue two and issue three.
Oh.
That are all $2.99 or $3.99 or $4.99 for some of these other books. So there's, anywhere from $6 to $12 right mm-hmm. there for all three issues, or $3 and they have to reorder it, and we don't know what the comic book artists or what the comic book store owners are actually making on this.
Ah, okay.
It's for the modern day stuff. It's interesting for the consumer, but could really hurt the comic book store owners. If they do this with older stuff, which is what I think they could possibly do, like bring in like a couple volumes of the Essential Captain America or the Essential X-Men or whoever, and three issues for $3, that could be what does really good mm-hmm. for younger readers.
It would get people familiar with the characters and the stories from back in the day. It would be a great way of kind of retelling or just reprinting those original stories.
All right.
And for those that don't know, Timely is the name of the comic book publisher that was before it was Marvel.
I believe, wasn't it Atlas first and then Timely?
No, it was Timely, then it was Atlas, then it was Marvel.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
Something
it was,
like that.
It was the name of the company when, like, Captain America first appeared and Namor and all those, like, the Human Torch, all those original comic book characters.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, that's your news. Before we move on to the big question of the week, got to remind you guys to head on over to patreon.com/galacticnetcasts, patreon.com/galacticnetcasts, and please help us with operational costs. That's my new way of saying it. You know, keeping the lights on, helping us pay for things that we need. What's that?
Helping us keep the ship afloat.
Yes, exactly. I like operational costs. It sounds very, that's an easy concept to understand. Like the web hosting, we need help with that. We need help with the audio hosting and maybe some advertising in the future. And you can do that with a small recurring monthly donation, as little as a dollar. We'd appreciate that. But you can go up to $3. And the reward with that is a newsletter of sorts. Newsletter once a month of extra stories related to our podcasts. Or the $5 level gets you an extra podcast episode. We just released the Weird World Weekly and Alien Invasion bonus podcast episodes this week. So those Patreon members got those, and we also released the newsletters for those podcasts as well. So next week or next month, March, if you're not already a Patreon patron at those levels, please get in on it. Again, it's patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. All right, Gregor. Gregor, Michael, and Brad, are you guys ready for the big question?
Let's do it.
All right.
Yes.
Hold on to your seats. Here we go. The Oscars were this past Sunday. So in honor of that, what do you think?
I boycotted it.
Okay. Well, you still know what happened. You don't have to have watched it to pipe in on this big question, Gregor. So in honor of the Academy Awards, what do you think a science fiction film has to do to win the Best Picture Academy Award? Like, what sort of story, characters, or other qualities that they need to have in order for it to become a contender in the Best Picture category?
It would have to not be about space.
Really?
No, I'm joking. Oh man, that's a really tough question.
Here's the thing though, because since the Academy Awards went to and it could be anywhere from 5 to 10 pictures, that made it to where, oh, we'll throw the bone out for the nomination to some sci-fi stuff.
I mean, well, they did that with Ex Machina.
Which I'm not saying okay, like, oh, and they're going to be crappy sci-fi things, movies. They're going to be phenomenal sci-fi movies in there for Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
And out of, I think, wasn't The Martian nominated as well for Best Picture?
Yes. Okay.
I think it got a nod, but I don't think it was nominated.
No. Yeah, I don't think it was nominated for the Best Picture. It had plenty of other nominations, but not Best Picture. The closest that we got this year was Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, and it's like, even with that, I mean, I honestly don't know. I think it would have to be, and I hate to say this because I love science fiction. I love movies in general. I mean, you know, forget, like, oh, I'm just one genre. It would have to be a year where the non-sci-fi movies all suck.
Really? You think so? You don't think that given the right director, the right writer, the right cast?
No, I can be proved wrong in that. But with what's being made now, you know, these brilliant stories like Ex Machina and The Martian and Mad Max Fury Road and Star Wars Episode 7, I could, you know, if they went up and we didn't get a movie like The Revenant or Room or, you know, The Danish Boy or all these other movies that have been
No, the problem is there's always going to be a Revenant. Yeah. There's always going to be something. And in fact, like, one thing I can say as a criteria, you can't have Matt Damon be stranded somewhere. Interstellar got screwed, and The Martian got screwed.
I forgot he was in Interstellar.
Was.
Yeah, trapped somewhere.
So, quite honestly, old Hollywood needs to die. Yeah. And once that's the big problem. I mean, as ruthless as that sounds, there's such a stigma in old Hollywood, I think, that really just doesn't happen.
This raises another question. Do the new rules for the Academy Awards, and I am hinting at the fact, you know, with the hashtag Oscars so white, that it's like the Academy has to be a voting person in the Academy, you have to have done something in the past 10 years in your medium or whatever. Does that change anything then?
So, wait, hold on. I don't know the details on that.
I'm looking them up right now.
Because I know there's now a range of movies that they can, a range of numbers, at least they can nominate. It could, you know, be up to, what was that, 10, 12 movies? But I didn't know if there was any kind of other criteria of people that voting, you know, you can only vote on a science fiction movie if you had produced a science fiction movie in the past 10 years, for example.
I thought as long as you were a member of the, if you were, what's the organization?
The Academy of Arts and Sciences.
Well, that's the organization that puts on the Academy Awards.
Oh, okay.
But a SAG member?
Screen Actors Guild?
Motion Pictures? Yeah.
I thought as long as you were a SAG member and you could vote, anybody could vote.
That's for the SAG Awards.
Oh, I thought that was the case, though, for the Academy Awards, though, as well.
I thought with and I'm not 100% sure, and I'd have to do... I would like, from what I understood about this is if you won an award for the Academy and the Academy Awards in the past, you were now a voting member of you were now a part of the Academy is how I understood it. Which would leave, you know, with the whole, you know, going back to the race thing, that would leave, I think 6, 7, maybe 10, minority people that are in there that are voting. But that's, again, that's something I'm not 100% sure.
That's interesting.
Yeah. How true it is.
Okay. Either way, we're getting bogged down in semantics here. Let's just talk about the qualities of sci-fi movies. So you guys aren't convinced that as long as there is movies like The Revenant or The Room or Spotlight, that any type of sci-fi movie is going to lose to those type of movies?
It's going to have to be something with that relative pacing with those movies, like Ex Machina. Ex Machina, I think, is probably the closest that anything has gotten in a while to being within a realm of sci-fi that was more accepted by the Academy, that's close to what they're expecting out of Academy grabs, with things like The Revenant and Room and... What, Brooklyn was one of them.
Yeah,
but there's something about the pacing of a lot of these movies, for one thing, and it's just the way that their story is told.
So what if 2001: A Space Odyssey never had existed, but then was released in 2016? And do you think something like that would be a contender?
No, I don't think it would, honestly.
Because it drags.
Well, I mean, okay.
And at this point, people now would compare it to Interstellar, and it might get some nods because if Kubrick still did it, I mean, it would get nods on that alone. But people are like, that's a weird Kubrick film. it's completely different group of people, you know, back then. That it is now.
Okay, so Do you think there needs...
I think one of the big things is it's going to have to be a hard science fiction movie. It's going to have to be something similar to an Interstellar.
But not where, it, you know, like not popcorn-y. Like,
You know, I do hear that... Aren't they working at rebooting Blade Runner?
Yeah, they are. They're going to do an actual sequel.
Well, so that may... If they're looking for it, that may actually have the potential to be an Oscar grab. Because it comes from such rich source material in its original...
It's technically a sequel, and I'm not sure how often sequels...
I don't think ever.
Three.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I was thinking of Gravity. Gravity was nominated for Best Picture.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, and it had that same kind of pacing. Like, you know, it had its moments, but it was, you know, it was a very intimate movie.
And some could say that's not really even a science fiction film, because it wasn't that fantastical. It was like maybe a little bit in the future, but not too out there as far as...
I mean, it had science, and it was a fictional story.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, yeah.
that's kind of their criteria.
Okay.
Yeah. That one would be a more hard science fiction, in my opinion, because it's not, you know...
Not in Neil deGrasse Tyson's eyes.
No, yeah. There's more disputable facts. Like, they're not saying, oh, he beat the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs or whatever. And, it's more like you look at Interstellar, where they had a physicist, I think it was a theoretical physicist, on there to make sure that what they were saying was closer to than when the writers for the TV show House would write the script, they would put in medical talk and then get a consultant to insert the words that they needed.
Interstellar still bothered me and all that, though. It was...
Really?
I haven't seen Interstellar.
I had issues with the sun. He was a completely worthless character, did not need to exist in this story between, you know, a man and his daughter was the story. The only reason for the sun that was there was just to kind of hold down the fort of the farm. Because the farm needed to be tended. That was his purpose.
His other purpose was to contrast the difference between the two kids. The difference between utility and dreaming.
Right. But at that rate, you kind of didn't really need the sun to point out that contrast.
You needed the farm illustrate the problems with the crops.
Right, right. And I get that. That's fine.
I guess you're right. You could have had anybody have a farm and that they were friendly with or whatever.
Right. And the brother could have been easily written out, and it was unnecessary to tell that part of the story. He literally, his purpose was just to babysit the farm.
Okay. So do you guys think a Star Wars movie could ever be nominated for Best Picture at the Academy Awards?
No.
No.
Okay.
I think the options are better now that, you know, I don't mean to say this like a dick, but now that, like, George, it's not really like up to George Lucas, because, like, yet where we are building these new and fantastical worlds in this universe, and it is a sequel in a lot of ways. I do think that we could get, you know, the movie being nominated. If not for the fact that, like, how I think it's like with Leonardo DiCaprio finally winning, and I've heard it numerous other times, like, oh, he got this award not only for this, but also because of all the other times that we snubbed him because there was someone else who was just a little bit better.
So maybe like after episode 10 is released episode 9.
I don't think it has a chance of being nominated at all because of the fact that's not the market Disney is going for.
No. Nope.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm agreeing with you, Michael. Absolutely. 100%.
Okay.
They don't care if Star Wars, you know, wins Best Picture. Any of the other awards? Yeah, because that's what they're looking for. They want the technical stuff, but they're investing other things into Best Picture. They want this just for the mass audience.
Yeah. The purpose of Star Wars is to fill Disney's coffers so that they can make Oscar-winning type material.
Yes.
What a cynic. Jesus.
Well, no. I'm a cynic. I'm a realist.
Yeah, that's business right there.
I know. I'm just giving you crap. All right. Okay. So
yeah, I don't think that's not going to happen.
Final thoughts on this question. Anybody have one more thing to say before we move on?
I would love to see in my lifetime the Academy finally give science fiction its due.
Yeah.
I want to see a space opera win, or actually at least get nominated for an Academy Award. That would be cool.
Macross. That would be the one.
Oh, what?
Macross would be the one space opera that could do that.
What's that?
So do you remember early 80s Robotech?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. It's the same thing. Robotech is the American version.
Oh, okay.
But it got bought. Its American licensing got bought out by this ridiculous company, Harmony Gold, that has embargoed everything that Macross has been doing for the past 30 years over in Japan. So that's why it hasn't shown up back here in America, because business.
That's too bad. I would love to see a live action RoboCop or Robotech movie. That would be awesome.
But there's some rumors that Tobey Maguire has been working on it.
Oh.
Or somebody. It's in development hell somewhere for a live action Robotech movie. But it's going to be more like a popcorn action flicky, like a Battleship, probably, I expect.
So not really high concept.
It has high concept, but it's not going to be geared to that kind of audience.
Okay. All right. That's your big question. If the listeners have something to say about this, we would love to hear it. 805-325-328-3966, 805-328-3966, the voicemail number, or email geeks@gncasts.com, geeks@gncasts.com. All right, time for our ing section, and this is, it's a brand new concept, it's a brand new name. It's been rebranded since both Michael and Gregor were on here last. It's basically our recommendation segment. Ing stands for reading, watching, listening, playing, etc. So it doesn't have to be something that you've completed. It can be something that you're reading right now or watching right now. It doesn't even have to be like a recommendation, like I recommend this, everybody should read it or whatever. It's just some form of ing related to sci-fi. So who wants to go first?
I can.
Okay.
Because I have it right here. This is our ops. This is the Vertigo book. This is actually the cover. This is issue 5. Yes, 5. And it is written by Stuart Simon and drawn by Michael Allred. You might have heard of Michael Allred because he's the dude who drew iZombie, who draws the opening cinematic for iZombie, who is drawing with, I think, his daughter or his wife, Silver Surfer, over at Marvel.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, this book, it's a great plot. It's a great premise. You have this agency like the DEO, or to go with the Supergirl universe. I don't know why I said Smallville. I blamed it on the car accident 2 days ago. But where you have these operatives who, whenever they hear, oh, the Mona Lisa is going to be stolen, they have this technology where they will pull out the Mona Lisa and then put in a fake. Like, literally a fake, like, pull out the real person, put in a fake person in there.
Interesting.
And that's what you've been going around with these couple of, or with these issues, is the art ops. We're at this place where the art ops are destroyed. There's someone who is trying to get, or they're in, like, very bare-bones skeleton crew, and you get someone tried to steal the Mona Lisa, so they pull Mona Lisa out, put in this stand-in, and the hilarity has ensued. it's a great book. The art, again, it's Michael Allred, who does great work. It's very stylized. You know, it's like you could usually tell if you're reading a Michael or looking at a Michael Allred art by the style, and he even admitted that he changed it up in here to where it doesn't look super Michael Allred-y.
Sorry, I see the resemblance.
Yeah. Here, I'll actually go in a little bit. It's good. And it's cool to see Mona Lisa in here. Let me see if I can get to it. Because it's like, you get moments where you're like, oh yeah, that's Michael Allred's art. But then it's like, no, that's the Mona Lisa. It's really good at how he captures the Mona Lisa. And oh, please tell me the Mona Lisa's not in this issue. But the story's really cool because you have these people, this lady who was like a doodle or something, but she wasn't truly appreciated as art. So now she's going around and making all the other art look hideous. Okay. So there is the Mona Lisa in his style right there. And it looks, it's like you can tell it's the Mona Lisa and how he does it. This is, because, and you know, again, she's a real person, so that's earlier in the page, mm-hmm. where you could still tell that it's the Mona Lisa, but, oh, she got her hair changed because she wants to fit in, and how else do you fit in but by becoming a punk rocker chick when you're in, you know, when in Rome sort of deal.
Right.
But no, it's a great book. I highly recommend it. It's through Vertigo, which is DC's mature readers imprint. And I think I might have mentioned this before, like a while back ago. But yeah, it's well worth checking out Vertigo in general. They got quite a good selection out there right now.
Excellent. All right. Thanks for your reading, Gregor.
Yes.
Brad, what do you got?
Hulu had Interstellar, so I finally got to see it.
Wow, on Hulu, eh? Hulu. Wow.
Yep, on the Hulu.
Hulu also has that 11/23/68 or whatever it is.
Oh, God. 63, yes.
American history, man.
I'm sorry, but those are numbers. I got to do with numbers at work all the time, so I
get numbers are like 4, 8, 12, 16, 32, 48. Is that, are those the numbers?
Hut. Oh, sorry.
Lost.
Ah. I was wondering where they came from. Okay.
So, Interstellar. Finally got a chance to see it, and I truly appreciate the amount of thought, and I know that they had a lot of research done. They had actual theoretical physicists come in and help actually create the model and the rendering for the singularity, for the black hole. And the entire thought that was put into the structure, the writing of the film, and how certain events kind of lay on each other, as perverted as that sounds. I mean, there's layers to this. And I thought that they meshed pretty well. And it really made me think, and I truly enjoy a movie that makes me think like that. So it was I enjoyed the hell out of it. And if you've got Hulu, I highly recommend checking it out.
It's a great all right movie. It was great. He was good.
It is a lot of all right.
And dealing with the concept of time dilation and all that stuff kind of messes with your brain when you try to wrap your head around it.
It was interesting when they got to a point in the movie where they realized that all of the resources they had, one of them was time. It wasn't just fuel and food and stuff like that. It was also time, because I don't think I'm really spoiling anything, but the Earth has issues, and these explorers are sent out through a wormhole to see if there is a place that can be colonized. And because of where this is located, and because they're traveling through a wormhole, there is time dilation. And so the thought is, you know, they could mess around, but if they did that, you know, everybody on Earth could be dead by the time they've got the mission done. So they had to start thinking in a manner of, okay, we're going to be close to this black hole. We're going to be searching this thing. We're going to lose, you know, 7 years doing this. 7 years an hour is what they calculated for one of the planets.
Yep.
So, you know, it just that whole thought process, that structure, I really enjoyed. So Interstellar, Hulu.
It makes you think, and it's a pretty movie.
It is.
All right, I'm going to go back to comics for mine. I'm going to go way, 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 way back to the beginning of comics in 1941. And it's Justice Society of America, a celebration of 75 years. I got this as part of my geek birthday package from my wife, along with last week's pick, which was the Star Wars poster collection, which is also really awesome.
Your wife is awesome.
Yeah, she is. And I got the Doctor Who socks, but they're not going to be one of my ings. That's just
you're walking.
Wearing. Wouldn't they be what you're wearing?
Yeah. I guess that could be an ing. You're right. You're totally right.
As long as it sucks, if we start getting the underwear, I don't need to.
Yeah. There's a certain, you draw a line at a certain point in your wardrobe that you shouldn't share with others.
No.
This is just basically a collection of stories that highlights the history of the Justice Society. And I'm only through the first story and a half. The first story from 1941 is painful to read. It's really, really bad. The early comics, they would explain absolutely everything they did, and they would take forever getting to the end of the story. Like, it would... And the dialogue, I guess maybe that's the way they talked back then, but I don't even... I'm not 100% sure on that even. But it's interesting... I'm really looking forward to tracing the history of the Justice Society through all its different incarnations. The first incarnation is, I don't know if you guys are, I'm sure you guys are familiar with the Justice Society, but for those watching the podcast that aren't, the first incarnation is the Flash, that's the Jay Garrick Flash, the Spectre, Dr. Fate, the Green Lantern. That's the original Green Lantern. The Hawkman, the Hourman, the Sandman, the Atom, and Johnny Thunder. And there they are right there. That's the original lineup right there. And the first story, they were fighting these, I forget what they called them, but they were like, it was pre-World War II. It was before the U.S. got involved in World War II. And they called them... I forget the name, but it was like insurgents, basically, like people that were from imperialist countries that the U.S. might be fighting in World War II, and their involvement actually in the U.S. Stirring up trouble. And the whole story was them trying to find the person that was organizing this and to take him down. So this is pre-World War, this is pre-U.S. involvement in World War II, which is kind of a weird concept. It was very, it's dripping with patriotism, the first story. Like, it's like all American, we're fighting this together, and America is great, everybody else sucks. And it's interesting to read a comic book with that much patriotism. The second story, they are fighting the Injustice League. So it's the introduction of the Injustice League. And it's going to be interesting to follow the history. It goes all the way up. Well, I'll run it down for you. It's 1941, 1947, 50, 63, another six, there's a few mid-60s ones, 1966, 70, 79, 81, 86, 92, 99, 2001, 2007, and 2012. or 2012. So it goes all the way through pretty much up until modern day. So it's definitely something that I will check back with you guys and tell you later. Might be another ing later down the road. So that's my ing this week. It's Justice Society celebration of 75 years.
If you get a chance, you can find this in a library or something like that.
Ooh.
Check this out. Yeah, this is DC did like their collections of some of their older comic series and stuff like that. So All-Star Comics. Something else I would recommend. Now I need to, because I kind of think of early comics like the Justice Society stuff, All-Star Comics. I equate it to Lord of the Rings. Here's why.
Oh, I can't wait for this.
Lord of the Rings kind of started, that was the beginning of the genre of like epic fantasy, right? So you read and compare, let's say Lord of the Rings to Name of the Wind. Both are epic fantasy, but there is a difference in the execution. Granted, one is obviously more current, so the language and the structure is a little bit more current, but the editing is a little bit more tight. I think that there's a lot of things that C.S. Lewis did versus what Patrick Rothfuss did. There's a lot of, because C.S. Lewis was kind of blazing the trail, there are some things that he attempted and did that you don't really do anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that, some of the early comics, if you can read with that kind of appreciation of, wow, that's how they did it, because they were really just starting out. And quite honestly, the mob has a big thing to do with comics. If there wasn't Prohibition, there probably wouldn't have been comic books.
Yeah, no, I can, so. I actually completely understand. I mean, I know how where they started from, and it's like anything. Like, listen to or watch, our early episodes of this podcast, or even the early episodes of the Alien Invasion podcast on this network.
Sure.
They sucked. I mean, we're probably still not that good, but we're better than we used to be. So it's just, iteration after iteration, they get better and better. And that's like the first iteration. So obviously it's not going to be good at all, really.
No. Yeah, absolutely true.
It's more of a historical perspective than anything. That's what I'm getting out of it, yeah. So.
No, absolutely.
Well, thanks for the additional bonus, Ing. I'll have to check that out sometime. Looks cool. All right, Michael, you're last but not least. What do you got for your ing?
Well, I guess mine, I've been creating, just working on my D&D world, and you can find, where is my link? Do I still have that? Yes, I sure do. Made a quick tiny URL link because it's got an oddball link structure, but you can find it at tinyurl.com/dicetomatoD&D, and not at the end. But just working on this world, trying to figure out, all the things going on in it with the characters and the players that are running around in it. Kind of lazy updating their adventure log so that they can look back on what's going on in the story, but still adding new relics, characters, city stuff, weekly on it. That's kind of my D&D blog, essentially.
Brad, have you talked, you and Michael talked about him coming on Adventure Party?
We have not, but we should.
Yeah, that'd be perfect for that.
Ooh. Absolutely.
You guys talk. Talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah, I'll have to contact you, and we'll try to schedule something.
All right, that sounds like fun.
Cool.
All right, so that is our ings, and we do have some feedback, but I'm going to actually save it to next week because we're running just a tad bit long. I don't want to go too much farther, so what I want to do is just...
Maybe on a podcast and run long, never.
Yeah, no, that would never happen. What I want to do is just kind of put out our contact information. You can email us, geeks@gncasts.com, geeks@gncasts.com. Call our voicemail number, 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. There's many other ways to contact us. You can leave a comment on the actual podcast episode page on the website. You can leave comments on our YouTube videos. We actually, Brad and I counted up all the different ways of contacting us on the alien invasion tonight, and there's like 12 different ways. So there's no lack of availability. If you have feedback, if you have some thoughts, questions about what we're talking about on our episodes, please find out how you can get a hold of us. You can just go to our website as well, gncasts.com. There's an actual page full of, chock full of contact information. Subscribe to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club via iTunes. And if you like what we do, please leave us 5 stars there and a short review. You can do the same on Stitcher, but do it per episode basis. If you want more subscription options, go to the subscribe tab at our website, gncasts.com. That's gncasts.com. And of course, this has been a production of Galactic Netcasts. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Michael Johnson, where can people find your you just gave us where you can people can find your stuff online. Where can people find you on, like, the social networks?
Well, outside of Trivia Geeks, Tuesday nights that we air on Diamond Club and Alpha Geek Radio, you can find me on Twitter and on Twitch. I do some game streaming every now and then. Just look up Dice Tomato. You'll find me.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Dave Nelson on behalf of Brad Greger. Hang on. Jump on the gun there, Mr. Greger.
No. I do it myself, too.
Okay. Brad, Anessa, Greger, Matt.
Bye, Dad.
Where was I? Let's see. Anessa, Jared, JF.
Corey.
Everybody. Michael. We'll talk to you guys next time.
All right.
Thanks, Dave.
Bye.
Yay.
You have been listening to a production of Galactic Netcasts. For more about this show and others, go to gncasts.com. That's GNCASTS.com.